Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
For the first time, we're going to talk about the Texas Longhorns here on Thunder and Lightning. Joe Cook joins me. He has been with Inside Texas for a number of years. They cover the Longhorns for On3 Sports. And Joe, I'm going to ask you to make a couple of cases for me to start things off here. Make the case that in year one, Texas is going to win the SEC.
Oh, man, that is a tough one to start off with. But let's go ahead and look at the schedule. Their toughest games, at least at this point, are either at a neutral site they're very familiar with or at home. And it's going to be in front of a packed crowd. Only problem is they're back-to-back, and that's Oklahoma at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, and then at Georgia heading to Austin the same weekend as a Formula One race. You can ignore the non-conference that includes Michigan, I guess, in this. But they get it. It's not the worst schedule. There's some positives to it. Looking at it right now, I know you have Mississippi State at home. You get Kentucky at home. But you do have to go to Fayetteville. And although there are problems there, they do have a talented quarterback, it looks like. And that's a place that hates Texas. Similar applies to Texas A&M. They are going to be loud and rocking. And then, of course, let's see, Florida comes to town. I don't expect anything out of the Gators. So, if talent comes to bear, there are probably two games that will really decide if Texas is a number one or number two team in the SEC. One of those is probably against a team with similar aspirations in Georgia. And I think they have the quarterbacks to do it, to be fair. I think they have the offensive line, receivers, running backs, tight ends. The one area of concern is defensive tackle, and I know that's big in the SEC, but they've shown acumen and, a level of play even throughout this spring to where if it all comes together, the recruiting classes they've built, the talent they have on hand goes toe-to-toe with anybody, and I'd take Sark as an offensive play caller and, for the most part, Pete Kwiatkowski as a defensive play caller up against pretty much anybody in the SEC to put it all together and maybe make their way to Atlanta and shock some people in year one.
All right, that's a strong case. Let's do it again. Make the case that Quinn Ewers is the best quarterback in college football.
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Well, hold on. Let me think about how to answer that. I think Quinn Ewers has showed a lot of development over his 2 years, now entering his third year at Texas. And I think that was development that sometimes he never had the chance to receive. He had a great arm. He had the right size for quarterback, and he was incredibly accurate with arm angles back when he was at South Lake Carroll in the DFW area. But he fought a lot through his junior year through injuries. And then before his senior year starts, he goes to Ohio State and enrolls literally the week before camp, along with, I think, Fields and Stroud, Jack Miller, a bunch of guys are there already, and he just goes up there. He's getting four-string reps. He loses, obviously, the chance to play his senior year of high school for a very well-regarded quarterbacks coach at South Lake Carroll. And so he's getting four-string reps. He's not really getting a whole lot. I think COVID was an issue for the Buckeyes at that point, and I think it hit Quinn as well. So then he decides to transfer, and then he's thrust into the starting spot. Well, he's thrust into the starting spot based off talent and potential alone and not off of anything proven. He has a lot of games where you see some flashes, but then he lays a stinker against TCU, is basically unplayable against Baylor, and comes out and has a pretty solid bowl game. And that portends a little bit for the following year. And then you see the chance for him to develop. That development helps Texas get to the college football playoff. It helps the offense win some games based off of his arm, Alabama, TCU, even the Big 12 title game. And so I think you can make the case that finally all that potential that some of these services saw as a sophomore in high school has been fully brought out, fully developed, and he's able to not only hit the short and intermediate throws, he's able to command the offense. He is probably going to have Steve Sarkisian in his ear with a headset based off what the new NCAA football rules allow him to do. And he's going to have a heck of a receiver core to throw to and an offensive line protecting him. I think if he stays healthy, which has been a concern, this is a year it really all comes together for Quinn Ewers. And all that development that he needed in order to get to this point, he's finally gotten to match with his extreme talent that he showed early.
You mentioned that Texas schedule. October 19th, Georgia will come to Texas. That should be, at worst, a top five matchup. It could very easily be 1-2. That is the biggest game at Texas. I know that the game with Oklahoma is in Dallas every year. At Texas, that's the biggest game since what?
Probably the Alabama game in 2022 when Bryce Young evaded a sack attempt by a blitzing corner almost miraculously to scamper down the sideline and set up the game-winning field goal. And then before that, it was, you'd probably have to say, LSU in 2019 when Joe Burrow and that trio of receivers on a 3rd and 17, on a blitz on 3rd and 17, I think he found either Chase or Jefferson over the middle and he scampered for the score. So the two biggest games that since the two biggest games prior have featured SEC teams with Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks. Georgia is going to be a massive one. It's going to be a wild, wild weekend in Austin. If anybody planned on going and you haven't gotten your hotel yet, good luck. I don't know if there's going to be any for y'all to go check out and check into, but that Georgia game is going to be huge. Luckily, unlike the LSU game the Alabama game in 2022, it should be at night. That was a Fox Sports symptom. This game's going to be on ESPN. It's going to have the number one team. And who knows? Maybe it's 1-2. I think that'd be something pretty cool to see. Ohio State's going to have something to say about that. But this is definitely, I think, the game Texas fans have had scheduled or circled on the schedule ever since they learned of the SEC 2024 slate.
Is that famous Arkansas-Texas game from 1969? Was that at Texas or at Arkansas?
That was at Arkansas. President Nixon was there, and it was 1-2.
I'm trying to think when the last time Texas would have had 1-2, if that does indeed come to pass. So
you know, I know they've had top five matchups. There's a very famous game with Oklahoma from 2008, where number five Texas upset Sam Bradford and the Sooners, and that was 5-1. I don't think they've played in a 1-2 in a long time, maybe since they played Georgia in a Cotton Bowl in the mid-1980s.
Before that, on September the 28th, the first ever SEC game in Austin will be against Mississippi State. If State fans who are coming to that game, I've already told them, like, first off, Austin, great town. You'll have a fantastic time. Is there any plan from Texas that you know of to do anything special or commemorative for that particular game?
You know, I'm not exactly sure at this point yet. That's something that maybe they'll release as they get closer to the game. Now, if you do go to a Texas game on the west side of Darrell K. Royal, Texas Memorial Stadium, they have something called Bevo Boulevard, which is kind of a place to grab beer. There's a midway for kids. There's a place to, you know, there's promos and cheerleaders, stuff that kind of really shows what Texas football is like. And of course, there are also some TVs and big screens there to make sure that you don't miss any of the action. They typically have a concert right outside the stadium. The LBJ Presidential Library is about a 4-iron from the stadium. And there's a big park where they put a stage and have some great musicians. They're going to have, for the spring game, Reckless Kelly, kind of a Texas Red Dirt artist who have done a lot of great things. And at some points, I'm trying to think of some other ones they've had, but they've had Ludacris before. Like, it's a good place to hang out before the game. It's in the middle of campus, and campus is in the middle of downtown, kind of, sort of. Mm-hmm. But there are some great places too, like Schultz's, Posse East, heck, even the UT Alumni Center. You can get in some AC for a very small fee and really enjoy what's going on there. So I don't know if they have anything specific planned, but they've definitely leaned into the SEC being a big deal, being something that'll help draw people, and they're going to do their best, I feel like, to welcome anybody who makes their way to Austin for any conference game.
One man's 4-iron is another man's driver. I just want to point that out to you, Joe. You never know.
Man, it's my I got to aim left so it goes right to hit it.
Let's talk a little bit about the team. I love the offensive line for Texas. So much experience coming back, and the one guy who isn't, you know, a multi-year starter for the Longhorns, Cameron Williams, is one of the biggest human beings you'll ever see. Just an absolute mauler there at right tackle. Is this going to be the best offensive line in the country?
It's got a good chance. Again, the one in Athens, Georgia, may have something to say about that, but you know, across the board, there has been a little bit of competition at a couple spots, but left tackle, third-year player Kelvin Banks, future first-rounder. He has started every game since he showed up on campus and has been a phenomenal protector of Quinn Ewers' blind side. I'll skip a spot, but center is fifth-year senior Jake Majors, who's drawn a lot of great reviews. Right guard is third-year player DJ Campbell, former five-star. There's some clips of him in the Alabama game that are truly impressive. And then the guy you mentioned, Cam Williams, has kind of taken that right tackle spot and proven that not only he's just a big human, but he's got some ability to move as well. The left guard spot has been interesting because last year, Hayden Connor, who I believe is going to be a fourth year senior this upcoming season, he started every game there. But there are some times where in the run game, he's not getting the push that I think Texas would like. Guys he's competed with include Neto Umozulu, who Steve Sarkisian kind of praised the other day, and even mentioned a time last year when he was in against some backups where he had to kind of wrangle him in. And also Cole Hudson, who started his true freshman year in 2022 at right guard before Campbell kind of usurped his spot. So four are set. You know, offensive line coaches like probably having seven or eight at their disposal and, you know, three more on top of their starting five. And so it looks like if there are going to be any changes or any competition that really comes up for grabs throughout fall camp, it's going to be at that left guard spot between Umozulu, Connor, and Hudson.
Isaiah Bond makes one of the biggest plays in the history of the University of Alabama, but in today's college football, now he's a Texas Longhorn. Is he the guy who can replace Xavier Worthy? Can he become one of the top wide receivers in the conference and in the country?
Yeah, I mean, you could make an argument that he was last year. And here's the thing, I think a lot of Texas fans are counting on. They're counting on Quinn Ewers being a little bit more efficient than Jalen Milroe. Jalen Milroe is a great deep ball passer. That's what Isaiah Bond was good at, but there were some intricacies that he wasn't great at. There's thoughts that Quinn Ewers can do that and that Bond could then be the number one guy. He's been praised as having some of the best speed on the team, if not the best speed. He's becoming a more complete receiver, and there's high hopes for him. If he's likely to take over that role, yeah, it would be Xavier Worthy's. But this wide receiver core is going to look a little bit different than the one last year. So think about it. You had Worthy with that 4.21 speed, probably about 5'11", 165. You had Adonai Mitchell, 6'3", 210, running a 4.3 at that boundary spot for the most part. And then you had Jordan Whittington, who's probably going to be an undrafted free agent and blocked like a fullback, was a reliable chain mover in the slot. The physical profile of the guys look a little bit different this year. You have Isaiah Bond, kind of the 6'1", you know, maybe 6'2", lean but not skinny, but a speedster. Matthew Golden is a little similar. He's a transfer from University of Houston who actually had two touchdown receptions against the Longhorns last year. And then Jonte Cook, who's a returning sophomore player, five-star in the 2023 class, who was the fourth receiver last year, but with those top three, basically had to wait his turn. Those guys have similar physical profiles, so you may see them move all over the field. All of them have some deep shot opportunities, but I think if you're looking for a wide receiver one, it's going to be Isaiah Bond.
This Texas defense last year was so strong in the middle with Sweat and Murphy. Those two guys, just big-time players for the Longhorns. Can they have that kind of presence this year, especially against the SEC offensive lines, which are just going to be, by their nature, a more physical group than you saw in the Big 12?
That's a million-dollar question this year. They return a lot of experience in the secondary. They return experience at linebacker and even their defensive end position, which has kind of been, I don't want to say abandoned, but neglected recruiting-wise in recent years, is back to having a lot of really great options there. But you're losing two guys who are probably going to be, our talent-wise, top 50 picks. Byron Murphy is going to be a top half of the first-round pick. Tavondre Sweat, if it weren't for his recent DUI, DWI, was going to be a top 50 pick. Those guys are tough to replace. They made running the ball dang near impossible for teams last year. With that said, the guys who are probably stepping in for them are a little bit different physical profile. Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton were the backups to them, but Texas likes to rotate their defensive tackles, so they're not short on playing time and they're not short on experience. They're fifth-year seniors. But are they going to be able to hold the middle and make running between the tackles basically a non-starter like it was for most of last season? I mean, they could, but that's probably not their strength right now. They're better moving around. They're better kind of stunting, but at the same time, there are going to be some situations where they just got to line up and go. I'm not totally concerned about that. Will this level of play be a step down? Yes. Does that make it bad? No. But with Texas really trying to rotate those defensive tackles, make sure guys are fresh in the fourth quarter. You know, I said it the other day, if they're in a 65-play game, they probably prefer like a 35-30 split between their defensive tackles. The question now is are those second guys who last year were Collins and Broughton, are they going to be able to make that level of play to where teams will see them go off the field and go like, all right, time to run up the middle? The answers right now are hopefully one more in the portal, maybe two. That's what Texas is looking for, I feel like, in this portal cycle. They have Aaron Bryant, who's actually from South Haven, who's drawn some pretty positive reviews. And Tia Sevilla, a transfer who started his career at UCLA, went to Arizona, and then now is transferred to Texas. Even a true freshman, which I know is sometimes a risky proposition at this position in the conference, in Alex January, has gotten some praise. So they're it's not like they're lacking options, but again, they're looking in the portal for defensive tackles. And I think if they can find one or maybe even two, they'll feel significantly better about what's going on in the trenches this season.
We like to use the term SEC ready sometimes when we talk about teams, and that's been the focus of these last few years as Texas and Oklahoma get closer to joining the SEC. I think Texas is SEC ready. This is a team that was in the college football playoff a season ago. I previewed Oklahoma on this podcast, and I asked Eddie Radosovich about Oklahoma, and I liked his answer, but I watch Oklahoma, and I don't think they are SEC ready. So I'm going to make you cross rivalry lines here for a second. Do you think Oklahoma is SEC ready?
I think that at the skill position, undoubtedly, Jackson Arnold is going to be a quality quarterback. And I think they were not sad to see Dillon Gabriel go so they can hand the reins over to Arnold. Running back has been recruited well, and they do pretty well at receiver there. They have a very experienced secondary. They have one of the best, a guy who may be a first team all SEC linebacker, and Danny Stutzman coming back. I think that Brent Venables and even some of the offensive guys, Joe John Finley and Seth Luttrell, are capable coaches. And I trust that Brent Venables, you know, it's tough for a Texas guy to say, but has he knows how to build a program inside a locker room, I feel like, after seeing it for so long with Dabo and with Bill Snyder and even with Bob Stoops. Here's the thing about the Sooners, and where you're probably going to see them be incredibly active. They lost. Not only did they lose offensive linemen, you know, to the draft, they were decimated in the portal along the offensive line. I don't think the situation's as dire on the defensive line, but I read Sooner Scoop, and that's Eddie's site, and I saw some discussion about how they may be looking to some true freshmen to maybe help out there. And like I said, that's a risky proposition. So that's tough. And in a league where you've got teams like Georgia, teams like Tennessee, heck, even Lane Kiffin, and I know that Jeff Lebby does this too. Everybody kind of talks about their passing attack and, oh, wow, look at these receivers. If you're going to give them 5 yards a carry, they'll take 5 yards a carry 60 times. And I wonder about that aspect for the Sooners. They do have one of the best offensive line coaches in the country in Bill Biedenbaugh. They have a very capable defensive staff led by Brent Venables. But they got to have the dudes. And I think unless something changes in the portal, Their trench play is going to be lacking when it comes to the SEC, but I feel like they're pretty much ready almost everywhere else.
Last question might be the most difficult, but our fans here in Mississippi need to know from when they make the trip. Best barbecue in Austin?
Oh, man. There are a bunch of different spots. If you got a – man, you're putting me on the spot here.
That's the toughest question, man.
The number one spot in Texas Monthly, which is, you know, kind of an arts, leisure, mm-hmm. you know, culture magazine.
I follow Daniel Vaughn.
It's yeah, so you know about Interstellar, and that's mm-hmm. not too far out of town. If it is a night game or an afternoon game, actually this may only be possible for a night game. There's a place in Lexington about 45 minutes out of town called Snows.
Yeah.
And you have to spend the night there, which is a little bit of a challenge, but you wake up and the 70 something, maybe 80 something year old pit master is there ripping whiskey shots with you while you're waiting on barbecue. But in town, people like Franklin's. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good place. You just have to wait in line. But I think my number one is a place called Terry Black's Barbecue.
Yeah,
they've started to branch out a little bit across the state. They're from a world renowned barbecue family, based out of Lockhart. They're Austin location. They've got one right by campus. That is fantastic. And that's my number one, as far as barbecue goes.
That's the most important piece of information that we've given out here on this interview. I just want to, that's the one everybody really needs to know, is where to eat when they're in Austin. Also, I've been told there's a pro tip with Franklin that if you order $100 worth of food, you can just pick it up. You don't have to wait in line.
Correct. You can. So, I think you can order ahead, but I haven't.
I've seen their menu. That wouldn't be too difficult to get $100 running on a tab there.
And the price of beef has gone significantly.
It's silly. Yeah, it's silly. Joe Cook, Inside Texas. Great to have you on, man. We'll have you back on during the summer when we're doing opponent previews, and then when we get into the season, we'll have you on. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.